Welcome back to the Below Average Joes MMA Show. On today's episode, we are talking all things UFC 299, otherwise known as UFC Vice City. The UFC is heading back to South Beach, Miami, Florida, where we will get a bantamweight championship fight between Sean O'Malley and Marlon Vera, a five-round co-main event between Dustin Poirier and Benoit St. Denis, and 29,000 other ranked fighters across the rest of the card. We're going to break it all down on today's show. And really, it's just a big weekend in the world of combat sports. Thursday night, the first PFL Europe card goes down. We even get to see the main card on YouTube. The return of the French phenom Cedric Duambe will be fighting for the first time in 2024. On Friday, Anthony Joshua is boxing Francis Ngannou. And Saturday, UFC 299. My goodness gracious, what a weekend it's going to be. And we're going to get into it right now. Arguably the biggest star in mixed martial arts right now, especially if we want to say active star, Sean O'Malley, the Sugar Show, is back in action to defend his bantamweight championship for the very first time, but it comes against Marlon Chito Vera, the only man that has beaten Sugar Sean O'Malley in his professional MMA career. Will he get revenge and make good on his first title defense, or will Chito steal the show once more? One could say Sean O'Malley is the face of Dana White's Contender Series, and that is because he earned a contract on Season 1, Episode 2, all the way back in 2017. We even had Uriah Faber and Snoop Dogg on commentary for that fight.
Three-piece dinner with biscuits. O'Malley! O'Malley!
He got a first-round knockout that night, and ever since, his stardom has grown fight by fight by fight. He started out in his UFC career 4-0 and 12-0 overall in his career, but that perfect record went to the wayside when he fought Marlon Chito Vera in August of 2020 at UFC 252. Now, I just went back and watched this fight before jumping in the studio today because all I've heard all week in the build-up to this fight is how the fight didn't play out fairly and how there was an injury and we didn't get to see both guys to their full 100% go. And so I just couldn't remember if, you know, I remember obviously Sean O'Malley's ankle, right ankle, was severely hindered in this fight. It was honestly something similar to that of which we saw in his Andre Sukumtoth victory that he had two fights prior to this Vera first time matchup. But I just couldn't remember in the sense of, did Marlon Chito Vera land damaging calf kicks, leg kicks to that leg of Sean O'Malley to cause this injury? And that is the main reason I wanted to go back and watch this fight. Obviously, because it only lasted 4 minutes and 40 seconds, there's only so much we can take away truly from what we got to see one-on-one in the cage. And so as I went back, it was Sean O'Malley who was landing the calf kicks, the leg kicks with his right leg. And so I lean to seeing that this injury was caused not by necessarily Marlon Chito Vera offensively, but defensively by checking kicks and just from Sean O'Malley having something go wrong in those kicks that he was throwing. That led to him rolling the ankle numerous times throughout that first round. He fell down around the 4 minute and 20 second mark of the first round. Marlon Chito Vera pounces on top and he lands a devastating left hand, followed up by, I believe, 3 to 5 brutal elbows with his left arm before referee Herb Dean jumped in and stopped the fight. Now, I will say, while they were unanswered strikes on the side of Sean O'Malley, the stoppage was rather quick. If you go back and watch it, it is within 10 seconds from the time the first punch lands to the time Herb Dean steps in, and it was over. And again, yes, they were unanswered. They were clean shots. But Sean was never out of it. He had his arms at least in a defensive position to at least try to continue blocking a couple more. So I believe that you add in those strikes with the injury that was apparent on the side of Sean O'Malley. That is what led Herb Dean to jump in quicker than maybe what he would usually. And that victory is what really catapulted Marlon Chito Vera into the biggest stardom, if you will, that he's ever had, because he's been in the UFC since November of 2014. Following that fight with O'Malley, he would face Jose Aldo, Marlon Vera, that is, in December of that very same year, 2020. He did lose a decision in that fight, but immediately jumped back on the horse and rallied off four straight victories, and five of his next six fights, as a matter of fact, were wins. He beat Davy Grant by decision. He brutally knocked out Frankie Edgar. He got a victory over Rob Font via decision, brutally knocked out Dominic Cruz, and then he did lose in March of 2023 to Corey Sandhagen in a main event slot where Corey looked unbelievable. Chito bounced back in August at UFC 292, which is a very meaningful card that we're going to talk about again in a second, where he did get a decision over Pedro Munhoz. So he's won five of his last six fights. The resume there is very, very strong, stronger than the resume of the current champion and what he had to do to get the title fight, Sean O'Malley. Sean O'Malley bounced back from that fight in 2020 to Marlon Vera by getting three knockouts in 2021. Thomas Almeida, Chris Moutinho, and Julian Paiva. He had an incredible year, one of the best years for any fighter in 2021, and he got back on track. But in July of 2022, he had a very, very close fight with Pedro Munhoz up until it ended at the 3 minute and 9 second mark of the second round in a no contest due to an eye poke. Pedro Munhoz was no longer able to see out of his eye. We got that fight scratched. And I'm going to be honest, Sean looked good, but so did Pedro Munhoz. That was a very, very close fight for the 8 minutes that we got to see it. Unfortunately, they never ran that fight back. And instead, Sean O'Malley faced Peter Yan in October of 2022. They went tit for tat for 15 minutes in one of the best fights of the year. But Sean O'Malley came out on top against the former champion in a split decision. And that victory is what earned him the shot at the Bantamweight Championship at UFC 292 last August. And so in Boston, Massachusetts in the fall of 2023, that is when the paths of Marlon Vera and Sean O'Malley met once more. They both got victories on the very same night. Sean O'Malley knocked out Aljamain Sterling in the second round to become the undisputed 135-pound champion of the world. Marlon Vera got a victory over Pedro Munhoz, making it five of his last six by victory against very game opponents, big name opponents. Sean O'Malley, mixed in with that resume of Marlon Vera, wanted revenge, wanted the biggest fight in the division, and that is what we get with the rematch this Saturday. And now listen, I understand the argument that people don't think Marlon Chito Vera is the most deserving of the bunch at 135 pounds. I think there are two names above him that are more deserving, if you will, of a title fight. One is Merab Dwalishwili, and two is Corey Sandhagen. But there are two caveats which resulted in us getting this fight instead. Really three. The first one is Sean O'Malley wanted this fight. He picked this fight. There is a storyline with this fight, and that is that it is a rematch. The only loss of his entire career was to Marlon Chito Vera. Now, the other two is with those two contenders. Merab, first and foremost, did not want to interfere with his friend and training partner, Aljamain Sterling, which resulted in him not getting a title fight during Aljo's reign. And then he thought Aljo would get a rematch against Sean O'Malley, which then resulted in him not wanting to pursue the fight with Sean O'Malley as much as maybe some would have wished he would have. Pair that in with a hand injury, bad recipe there. That leaves Merab out. He did just fight recently against Henry Cejudo, put on a fantastic performance. I believe that was his 10th or 11th straight victory. And a new update is that he is the backup fighter should O'Malley or Vera be unable to compete. And the other name, Corey Sandhagen. He lost two in a row at one point, TJ Dillashaw and Peter Yan, but since has tallied off three straight victories. He finished Song Yadong, he beat Marlon Chito Vera, and he beat Rob Font in August in Nashville. However, in that fight, Corey Sandhagen got injured, and I believe toward the end of the year, he had an interview saying he would not be ready until April or May, thus leaving him out of this potential fight happening March 9th. So put all of those ingredients in the pot, mix them together, and that is how we get here with the rematch, Sean O'Malley versus Marlon Chito Vera 2. And listen, I think Chito Vera is still, if you want to look at a full body resume, his is up there with even the guys of Merab Dewalishvili and Corey Sandhagen. When you look at these past couple of years, add in the storylines, I'm okay with him getting this rematch. And I think it's going to lead to an incredible fight. Marlon Vera has never been finished. He has 8 losses. All of them are by decision. Sean O'Malley is known for his knockout power. But if he cannot knock out Marlon Chito Vera, like he already hasn't been able to do one time prior, what does that mean? What will it mean when we get to rounds 3, 4, and 5? That is what I'm excited to find out. I think we're going to get a 25-minute or less striking affair between these two top-ranked bantamweights in the world. Sean O'Malley at 29, Marlon Vera at 31, both guys in their prime. If we're ever going to get this rematch, now is the perfect time to do it while the rest of the division clears itself up. Marlon Vera has a chance again to steal the show, as I said at the top of this recording, and to really cement himself as one of the best 135-pounders in the world. Undoubtedly, there will be no more questions if he is deserving, if he gets this victory here. And if Sean wins, he further cements himself as what I believe to be the biggest active star currently going in mixed martial arts. I think by the time 2024 comes to an end, Dustin Poirier versus Benoit St. Denis, result aside, this coming weekend, will be the most unexpected mixed martial arts fight of the year for me. Number 3 ranked lightweight in the world, former interim lightweight champion Dustin the Diamond Poirier is back in action for the first time since August of last year when he lost via brutal head kick knockout to Justin Gaethje in their rematch. He will be taking on the surging number 12 ranked Benoit St. Denis out of France, who has won 5 fights in a row, all by finish. When this fight was announced, I was utterly shocked. I mean, you want to talk about something coming out of left field? That's what this gave me the vibe of when Dominic Cruz got announced to fight Casey Kinney a few years back. I remember that with Noah. We were like, what is this? This fight is just so random and unexpected. That is what this is, but to a very higher degree, a higher magnitude, because this is 2 top 15 guys, one guy on the come up, 5-0 in his prime right now, and Dustin Poirier, the seasoned veteran who's been there and done that, but coming in off of a knockout loss. Over the past 6 years, Dustin Poirier has built himself up to be one of the most recognizable names in the UFC and in all of mixed martial arts. He's put together 2 runs to earn 2 shots at the UFC lightweight title. The first came from 2017 to 2019, where he beat Anthony Pettis, Justin Gaethje, Eddie Alvarez, and Max Holloway. He finished those first 3 and put on a great fight against Max Holloway in April of 2019. That win over Holloway earned him the interim lightweight championship of the world, and then he would go on to face Khabib Nurmagomedov in September of that very same year for the undisputed title. He would lose in the 3rd round via submission. Khabib would go on to fight, I believe, 1 or 2 more times, retire 29-0 undefeated. But after that, Dustin Poirier bounced back, rubbed the dirt off. He had a fight of the year contender in 2020 with Dan Hooker in a winning effort. He finished Conor McGregor 2 times, once by brutal knockout, the second time TKO due to leg injury, but very fun fight for the first round. And in that second undisputed title shot, he lost to Charles Dubronx Oliveira in the 3rd round by submission. History repeats itself, unfortunately, for Dustin Poirier in those undisputed title fights. At Madison Square Garden in November of 2022, he had an insane war with Michael Chandler where he submitted him in the 3rd round. And then, as we just discussed, in July of 2023, he got knocked out by Justin Gaethje in their rematch. That happened 1 minute in to the second round. This will be Dustin Poirier's 39th professional fight and 30th fight under the UFC banner as he welcomes Benoit St. Denis to the top 10 and to the top 5 and to the top 3. Benoit St. Denis was undefeated as a professional mixed martial artist when he debuted in the UFC in October of 2021. He lost the decision to Elizo Zalecki dos Santos in that fight. But ever since then, what started out as a very quiet climb, you know, one win, two win, he beat the undefeated at the time, Ismael Bonfim, and that was when people started to recognize the danger that Benoit St. Denis presents. And since that win, he's tallied off two more over the most notable names on his resume, a TKO against Thiago Moises and a first round head kick knockout over Matt Frivola. That happened at Madison Square Garden in November of last year. And he entered into the top 15 after that victory. He's currently sitting at number 12, but out of nowhere, he gets a shot at Dustin the Diamond Poirier to hopscotch an entire division and put himself next in line for a title shot, assuming, you know, we kind of got to figure out what happens. We've got Charles versus Armand. We've got Justin Gaethje, but he wins this fight. He's right there in the passenger seat of the title contender SUV. And not only is he getting this huge opportunity against a huge name, a very recognizable borderline star even in Dustin Poirier, but he's the betting favorite. Benoit St. Denis is a 2-1 betting favorite, minus 205 currently. Dustin Poirier on the comeback at plus 170. This is crazy. I understand it's a game of momentum. Dustin Poirier coming off of a knockout, 35 years old. What really more does he have to prove? Benoit St. Denis, the younger guy, he's surging. He's been knocking out and submitting everybody in his path. And that would lead to what you would assume to be maybe a favorite or a pick'em at the worst on the side of Benoit St. Denis. But no, the line has grown day by day all the way to a 2-1 favorite on the side of the Frenchman. Now, will this lead me to play Dustin Poirier as an underdog simply because I am bamboozled by these odds? Well, maybe. Kids aren't allowed to bet, but you get the point. Don't bet with your heart. Bet with your brain. I may just do it, though. I may go against my advice there. I mean, I'm terrible at betting anyway. You see it every week on the Below Average Bet Slip. If you don't, it's your shameless plug to go follow along on social media. You can be a part of that bet slip and fade me. You'd make a lot of money so far through the first 2 months of the year. But here we are, UFC 299, Dustin Poirier with a chance to halt the momentum of the surging young stud. I would say prospect, but my goodness, you'd think he's a five-year UFC veteran at this point, getting this opportunity so quickly. And Benoit gets a chance to get the biggest name of his career on his resume. And again, like I just stated, put himself into title contention in the most or second most stacked division in the UFC right now, 155 pounds. Don't blink when this fight happens. You put together these guys' last five fights each, 10 total combined. None of them have gone the distance. I don't believe any of them, or hardly any of them, have even reached the third round. I guess the graphic is on the screen, Dom. Two of them have gone to the third round, those both on the side of Dustin Poirier. I should have known. I literally said he had a third round submission loss to Charles Oliveira. My brain's going a mile a minute. There's so many great fights to talk about. My apologies. And one last wrinkle here when you add in this violence that I just mentioned is that this is a five-round fight. Dustin Poirier has seen it all. He's went 25 minutes. He's went 20 minutes. He's went a full 15 minutes. Benoit St. Denis has went the distance one time in his entire MMA career, which spans 15 fights. And that was only three rounds. Does he have the extra 5 minutes for round four, the extra 10 minutes to make it through round five like Dustin Poirier has shown to do? That is what we are going to get to find out, because I think early on in this fight, Benoit is going to look to be aggressive as he always is and finish Dustin Poirier very quickly. If he cannot, if Dustin can withstand the storm, which we've seen him do, what will it mean in rounds three, rounds four, and rounds five for the former interim lightweight champion, that may just be his best path to victory over the dangerous God of War, Benoit Saint Denis. And now that we are done with the co-main and main event discussions, let's hop into the rest of UFC 299 because the amazing fights just keep on rolling. We first will make a stop in the 170-pound division as in the featured bout of the evening, Kevin Holland Big Mouth is back in action facing a 19-fight Bellator veteran making his long-awaited UFC debut, Michael Venom Page. After losing a split decision in September of 2023 to Jack Della Maddalena, who we will discuss next, Kevin Holland is back in action, looking to get back into the win column, one of the most fun fighters in UFC history, and especially current day in the promotion. After winning on Dana White's Contender Series in June of 2018, Kevin Holland made a short notice debut into the UFC in August of that same year in a losing effort to Thiago Santos. And including that fight, up until his most recent bout in September of 2023, he has fought 20 times, far and away the most active fighter over the last 5 years, and he looks to right the ship early on in 2024, and it's by welcoming a longtime Bellator veteran, the 36-year-old Michael Page of England. Michael Page has an overall record of 21 wins and 2 losses, in Bellator specifically 17 wins to 2 losses. The only 2 losses in the promotion were to Logan Storley in 2022 and Douglas Lima in 2019. At those respective times, those two guys were at the top of their game and at the top of their divisions. It will have been almost one full year since MVP's last fight. It was March 10th of 2023 when he got a 26-second TKO via leg kicks against Gochi Yamauchi. 16 of his 21 victories have come by finish. He's won 7 of his last 8 fights. He is an electric fighter that a lot of people enjoy watching. Pair that with Kevin Holland, who is never in a boring fight. I look for this to be fireworks for as long or as short as this fight goes. It's scheduled for 3 5-minute rounds. We'll see if it goes to the judges' scorecards. And the odds for this one are very close. I believe Kevin Holland's around the minus 130 favorite area. So MVP coming into his debut as an underdog, as I believe he rightfully should. I think those odds are relatively accurate. You got to think you're at 36. He's entering out of his prime. So is it a similar stance to Michael Chandler where I'm not here for a long time, but I'm here for a good time? Can Michael Venom Page make the same type of impact that we have seen Michael Chandler do? Beating Kevin Holland this Saturday would be one heck of a way to start. We stay in the welterweight division as the number 4-ranked Gilbert Burns will be welcoming the number 11-ranked Jack Della Maddalena to the division's top 5. Gilbert Burns last fought May 6th of 2023 in a losing effort to Bilal Muhammad, but prior to that had won 2 straight fights versus Jorge Masvidal and versus Neil Magny. And really, if you want to go even before that, he's fought nothing but the best in the world. Khamzat Chimaev, Stephen Thompson, Kamaru Usman in a title fight where people, I think, forget he damn near knocked out Kamaru Usman in the first round of their bout. He beat Tyron Woodley, Damian Maya en route to getting that title shot. Gilbert Burns' experience is close to being unmatched right now amongst the top 15 at welterweight. And Jack Della Maddalena, that is the biggest glaring hole here, is that strength of schedule for Gilbert and the experience that he brings in, including championship contention experience to Jackie Moon, as I like to call him.
What did I say?
You said that's my seat.
That being said, Jack Della Maddalena has recorded a 6-0 record. He is perfect in the UFC thus far after earning his contract on Dana White's Contender Series in 2021 in an amazing fight with Ange Losa. He started his UFC tenure with 4 straight first-round knockouts, even with one of those coming to Randy Brown. But since then, he's had 2 performances that haven't quite awed the crowd as much as those first 4. The first one was July of last year where he fought a short-notice opponent, Basil Hafez, who just got announced to be fighting Mickey Gall in the near future, I believe in May, if I'm not mistaken, so keep your eyes out on that one. Hafez brought the fight to Jack. It was a very, very fun fight. It was a dog fight, if I've ever seen it, and it went to a split decision. Hafez almost pulled off one of the biggest upsets of 2023. To be fair, Jack Della Maddalena, the weight cutting and the opponent switching and all that, I think it was a bad combination to put on another first round knockout performance. Now, could he have put on a better performance? Yes. I think his fight IQ lacked a lot in that fight. He was pulling guard, trying to pull submissions when he's not necessarily known for that. And that allowed Hafez to garner a ton of ground and pound and control time. But Jack did get the victory, turned around just 2 months later. So again, a weight cut 2 months after this weight cut, I believe, played a factor in his performance against Kevin Holland. That fight was a very good scrap, though, for what it's worth. Now both of them are fighting on the very same night, looking to get a win. I am a very big believer in Jack Della Maddalena. He's 16-2. He's from Australia. He's 27 years old. His hands are beautiful to watch when he's on the feet. I want to see now, with rest and recovery, a full training camp coming in, this is a humongous jump to go from Kevin Holland to Gilbert Burns, in my opinion, just because we know who Gilbert Burns has been in that cage with, has shared that octagon with, and he's a jack of all trades. He holds knockout power on the feet. He's a jiu-jitsu world champion. Look at his fight with Khamzat Chimaev and just how closely competitive that was. If Jack is not prepared and made improvements over these past, what is it now, 6-7 months, he could be in for a rude awakening against the underdog on the betting slate, Gilbert Durinho Burns. Next, we go to 135 pounds, arguably the best division in the UFC right now, men's bantamweight, in a fight that is getting supremely underrated simply due to the fact that this card is absolutely loaded top to bottom. And that is a fight between the number 4 ranked former champion Petr Yan and the number 7 ranked and surging hot prospect Song Yadong. And to be honest with you, it feels weird calling Song Yadong.
Who?
To be honest, it feels weird to say Song Yadong is still a prospect. He's number 7 in the division. He's got 13 fights already in the UFC, but he's only 26 years old. He's not even in his prime yet. And I think he's, in that example, still a prospect regardless of his ranking. But I will say this, if he beats Petr Yan, I'll officially get rid of the prospect title because then he will become a title challenger. Petr Yan, skill for skill, is one of the best fighters in the world. I do truly still believe that, but he's lost 3 fights in a row. He's lost 4 of his last 5 fights. The only victory was an incredible fight against Corey Sandhagen, my favorite fight of 2021, as a matter of fact. But you look at these losses, it's two Aljamain Sterling twice. The first one obviously was due to an illegal knee in a fight that Petr Yan was cruising in prior to that illegal strike happening. The second fight with Aljo, Aljamain had a great performance. Tip the cap. Sean O'Malley, very back and forth, could have went either way. And then he did very convincingly lose to Merab Dewali Shui Li. But that win continues to age like a fine wine because everyone is getting ran through by Merab currently. So he's 31 years old, right in those prime years. I believe this could be a big bounce back spot for Petr Yan. I think this is the type of spot for him to say, y'all must have forgot just how damn good I am. Just how good I was to make a championship run, to dismantle Jose Aldo en route to becoming the champion. I think this is a big time opportunity for Petr Yan. And if he loses here, makes it 5 out of 6, 4 in a row, all of a sudden, a number 4 ranked fighter in a division, is on the brink of maybe having to go to another promotion. And Song Yadong, on the other hand, has won 5 of his last 6. He's won 2 in a row over Ricky Simone, over Chris Gutierrez. His only loss in that span was to Corey Sandhagen in a 5-round fight where it got stopped at the end of round 4 due to a doctor stoppage from the damage that Corey had put on him. He is starting to rack up a very good resume in his own right, and this by far would be the biggest win of Song Yadong's young career. And if he can win here on the very same night that the champion is defending his title, and regardless of if O'Malley wins, even if Marlon Chito Vera wins, you're making storylines. And why is that? Marlon Chito Vera and Song Yadong fought back in May of 2020, and guess who won that fight? Song Yadong. So could we see a world where Marlon Vera pulls a Sean O'Malley and says, I want to fight Song Yadong next. I want to get revenge from a loss a few years back, just like Sean is doing, and what that is how we got here in the first place to the UFC 299 main event. Merab, I know you deserve it. I'm not saying you should not be next for the title, but I'm just saying it's not that crazy, right? And my goodness, the prelim headliners between the number 5 ranked heavyweight in the world, Curtis Blaydes, and the absolute dominant force that is the number 7 ranked Jailton Almeida. This fight was originally scheduled to happen in November of last year. Curtis Blaydes had to pull out due to injury. In stepped the Black Beast, Derek Lewis. Almeida took it all 5 rounds in a very one-sided dominant showing where he got the decision victory over Derek. So many people were whining and complaining about that performance from Almeida as if he didn't just outclass Derek in every aspect of that fight. The guy, God forbid, doesn't get a first-round stoppage for the first time in his UFC career, essentially, and people are coming at his neck. The fact of the matter is, Jailton Almeida is 6-0 in the UFC with 5 finishes, 4 of those 5 coming in the first round. He's one of the most elite prospects, truly, that there is in the UFC right now. He's 20-2. He's right in his prime at 32 years old. And the guy can fight at light heavyweight as well. And a lot of people think that if he loses to Curtis Blaydes, which there are a lot of people out there right now leaning Curtis, this is a pick'em right now on the money line at minus 110 apiece. Jailton could go back down to light heavyweight. And to be honest with you, I think he could run through that division too. So we'll see how this fight plays out. We know that Almeida looks to take down every single one of his opponents and dominate them on the ground. Well, that sounds awful familiar because so does Curtis Razor Blaydes. However, we've seen Curtis over the past few years clean up his striking, both defensively and especially offensively. He even knocked out Chris Daukaus. It's on my wall behind me. He did it in very clean fashion, I believe in the 2nd round back in March of 2022. He's won 3 of his last 4 fights. The only loss was to, arguably still to this day, the most dangerous man in the heavyweight division, Sergey Pavlovich. I'm very excited to see how this fight will play out. Here's the simple fact, is we don't ever really get to see Curtis Blaydes defensively wrestle. So does he have good takedown defense? One would assume. He's an amazing, very accredited wrestler throughout his entire professional mixed martial arts and amateur wrestling career. Jailton Almeida, if he cannot get Curtis Blaydes down, can he really compete on the feet with Curtis Blaydes for 15 minutes? Because we've not seen Almeida get that chance or have that opportunity to do so because no one else has been able to stop his takedowns. Curtis Blaydes could be that guy. And I think should Almeida win this fight, he would be on the short list of title contenders at heavyweight with Tom Aspinall currently as the interim champion. We don't know what the heck's going on with Stipe Miocic and John Jones. It's assumed that they still want to fight each other. John's injured. He's in PFL talking about Francis Ngannou. I don't know what's going to happen, but if they're still waiting to clear up their stuff at the end of the year, I would be perfectly fine with Almeida versus Aspinall. But again, Almeida's got to get through Curtis Razor Blaydes first, and that's someone that not a lot of people have been able to do or have been able to say that they've went through in this division. And most of the people that have went through Curtis Blaydes have became a UFC champion, i.e. Francis Ngannou, 2 different times. Well, not 2 times as a champion, but he beat Curtis 2 times and then became a champion. You get the point. Then at women's flyweight, we have the number 4 ranked former title challenger, Caitlin Serminara, formerly known as Caitlin Chookagian. She is taking on Macy Barber, who is on the biggest run of her UFC career. There is no one that gatekeeps a shot into the top 3 and or a title shot opportunity more than Caitlin Serminara. She's won 4 of her last 5 fights, which I think people tend to forget. The only loss was in October of 2022. Yes, she was inactive throughout all of 2023. That was to Manon Fior. Part of the inactivity from this past year and a half for Caitlin is the fact that she has went through 2 miscarriages in her personal life, and that is just a gut-wrenching, terrible story that we had to hear throughout media day from her. So I do wish her and her husband the best as they go throughout this journey. I can't even imagine trying to get into the cage and fight after going through all of that trauma. And she said this is her escape. That is her whole reason for fighting, is to put that out of the back of her mind and get into action here. And if she wins, she will make it 5 of her last 6 fights as victories. She's beaten Amanda Ribas, Jennifer Maia, Viviane Araújo, and Cynthia Calvillo. It will not come easy, because there might not be more of a dog mentality at women's 125 than from Macy the Future Barber. The 25-year-old Barber started out incredibly in her young career. She was super young when she won on Dana White's Contender Series. She surged through her first 4 opponents, if you want to count that one, on the Contender, and 3 in the UFC. All of those victories were by TKO. But she got halted. She got humbled, even, some would say. She lost to Roxanne Modafferi and did suffer a torn ACL in that fight. Had to sit out 13 months before coming back and then losing to the current champion, Alexa Grasso. But since then, she has been on a tear. 5 fights in a row, all by victory, and each one has been a better performance. Her fight with Miranda Maverick arguably could have went the way of Maverick. Fear the Maverick is just coming off of a very big win a few weeks back. I believe it was at UFC 297, if I remember correctly. And then she beat Montana De La Rosa, Jessica Ai, Andrea Lee, and then had one of the best fights of 2023, and maybe the best women's fight of 2023. There was also a great one that featured Irene Aldana in December of 2023. But this is up there with it, and that was against Amanda Ribas, where she finished her via TKO 3 minutes and 42 seconds into the second round. So Macy Barber will look to crack into the top 5 for the first time in her career and make it 6 straight wins. She, again, just has that dog mentality. She likes to make fights ugly. She is super aggressive, keeps a very high pace. She's only 25 years old, so not even in her prime years yet. For Caitlin, she's been there. She's done that. She's fought all of the best fighters at 125 pounds. Will she utilize her long reach and the way in which she fights with her boxing and keeping opponents at range? Will she be able to keep Barber away enough so that she can get a victory? In the lightweight division, we have number 6 ranked Matosh Gamrot and number 11 ranked former lightweight champion of the world, Rafael Dos Anjos. Gamrot has a 6-2 record in the UFC since debuting back in October of 2020, and he's won 2 back-to-back fights, one over Rafael Fiziev, where we did see an And I'll tell you what, bantamweight just keeps on coming.
What do you mean by that?
Because we have the number 13 ranked Pedro Munhoz taking on the surging, on the outside looking in, Kyler Phillips. Pedro lost to Marlon Chito Vera at UFC 292 back in August. That is what got Marlon Chito Vera this title shot to main event this weekend's card. And for Kyler Phillips, he's someone that is the definition of just flying under the radar. But now here he is looking to crack into the top 15. He's 5-1 in the UFC, the only loss to Holly and Paiva via majority decision back in July of 2021. So I think that's the most glaring thing for me, is just the inactivity of Kyler Phillips. He enters this fight as a relatively big favorite. I think Pedro Munhoz is a very live dog in this fight. You look at just in August, you know, his most recent fight, it was no landslide victory for Marlon Chito Vera. It was a very close fight. And then before that, he beat Chris Gutierrez and halted him from surging up further into the rankings. And prior to that, he had a very good fight with Sean O'Malley. And by no means was he out of that fight. That was a fight that arguably Pedro Munhoz was even winning before it got stopped due to the eye poke. I think this is going to be a very, very back and forth, just high level technical fight at 135 pounds on the prelims. You've got to tune in to this fight, because Kyler Phillips gets a chance to crack into the top 15. Pedro Munhoz gets a chance to once again play spoiler to someone surging and hold his spot. And truthfully, the fun just keeps going throughout the remainder of the prelims. We've got Yan Cutelaba versus Felipe Lenz at light heavyweight, Michelle Pereira versus Michael Oleksichek at middleweight, which I think is actually going to be a really, really fun stylistic clash. We've got a guy in the heavyweight division. I don't want to mess up his name. That means I'm probably going to mess up his name. Robles Despage. That's not right, but that's what I'm going to say. He's 4-0, undefeated, kickboxing phenom, 6'7", 86-inch reach, and he's facing Josh Parisian. Robles, his last three fights have combined for 19 seconds. You probably don't want to blink during that fight. CJ Vergara has taken on a very dangerous young up-and-comer in Asu Almabayev, and the first fight of the night is a really fun scrap at women's flyweight between Joanne Wood, who I believe may or may not be retiring, win or lose in this fight, and Marina Moroz. It's actually a rematch a few years in the making. And that's it. This episode is over. Wow, what a night it's going to be this Saturday. Enjoy the fights. Tune in, and I'll see you on Monday as we recap all of the action. Again, if you're new, be sure to follow on your favorite audio podcasting platform. Drop a rating as it helps the show grow. Subscribe to the YouTube channel and follow along and join the community on social media at the BAJ MMA. Thank you for all your support. Have a great weekend.